Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting across from Yumi Steins, who's got a new book, which is kind of difficult to say. Let's just say content warning before even mentioning the damn book. It's called the Zero Fucks Cookbook.
Yeah,
we said fuck. Welcome, Yumi.
Thanks, guys.
A R-rated, I suppose, podcast.
We've done one of those before.
We're on the other side now. Yeah. We can do what we like.
Okay, great.
Yumi, can I start by asking, was it your idea to have the F word front center, or did
front
someone
center.
Come up and tap you on the shoulder and say, the F word is the in thing, you have to write an F word book?
I wish.
We'll publish anything if it's got the F word on
it. Yeah, yeah, it's all about zero fucks. No one gives a fuck anymore. Just put it in there. Yeah, no, so I had the idea about 2.5 years ago. And then it was only until I'd been knocked back by publishers and people said, no, you can't call a cookbook that. You can't even have a concept like that, that other books started to appear, like The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, mm-hmm. and more and more. So I thought it was going to be polarizing to have a zero fucks cookbook, but also it encapsulates the idea so neatly. So I'm fine for it to polarize the wrong people and for them to fuck off. And the people who need this book, they'll get it just from the title. They'll be like, yeah, bitch, she's got me.
there's no mistaking what it's all about.
Like exactly.
And especially in this, I mean, there may be, for, as you said,
you're not even wearing shoes on the cover photo.
No, shoes. That's how little fuck I am.
So like, I'm one of five kids, and yeah. I think my mother gave zero fucks at a certain when we're all under 10. I'd say that there were zero fucks to give. And I probably, if I look back on it, and I hope Mum's not listening, I kind of wish she had your book. Because and she says it's all our fault because we're so picky on things. But I remember, you know when you eat brown mince?
Yeah.
And she would call that bolognese, and they'd pop it on top of pasta, in that, just without any sauce, just the brown mince on top of pasta, and then we'd have to sort of, and she was pretty much saying that we all complained about tomato and sauce and gooiness and the rest of it. But I think it just became easy for her just to sort of go, okay, you all complain, here's your simple food. But if she had this, there are many things in here that would not have taken too much effort.
That's right.
You even got Brussels sprouts. The no complaints Brussels sprouts?
I can't remember what they're called. Sexy?
More please, Brussels sprouts.
More please, that's what.
Yeah,
please,
because
Brussels
they're
sprouts.
Really yummy. They're almost an aphrodisiac. They're so good. And Brussels sprouts is a classic example because as kids we think, oh, this is disgusting. But it's because it was done wrong, you know, and our mums didn't give a fuck, but they were also cooking from a more ignorant place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got all this enlightenment, but I think it burdens people, particularly women. Mm. Like, you know, do this fantastic, make a jus, julienne your capsicum. And it's lovely, but I'd rather go out for that sort of food. And at home, I just really need to keep things simple. But I still want it to be lovely. I just don't want it to be fussy.
So you've got four kids.
Four kids.
Quite a range of ages.
Yeah,
as well. And so they've got friends coming over at any time.
Oh, yes.
So you've got to be pretty flexible.
Very flexible. And also, I like this idea. I've always had this fantasy that people would just turn up to my house, you know, and know that they could be fed. You know, friends, but even sort of distant people that might be a bit lost, that they're welcome.
Yeah.
And that my house is really warm and welcoming, and it's messy enough that no one feels like they have to sit up straight or they might break something, you know, that they can just be themselves and be quite relaxed. So I need food that's a bit flexible, but also that doesn't intimidate people.
Mm. Well, as we grew up, I mean, my mum having the same, because the five kids, they're all sort of hitting their teens, and it just, every time it was lunch or dinner, they seemed to be, who the hell are you? What are you doing at that table? That kind of...
The mates turn up.
Yeah, the mates.
And how much do teenagers eat, too?
Yeah. We used to, because we're big, like, I'm the runt in my family.
Right.
So we ate, so loaves would just disappear, boom, gone. Yeah, and just swallow them down.
Yeah, and I remember milk just vanishes out of the fridge.
Yeah, just have a cow plug in.
Totally. Yeah, so that's kind of the idea, is feeding volumes of people. Also having functional leftovers, you know, because I work in an office and I don't like the food that's available there because it's out of a vending machine. So, you know, so if you make something that's big enough to feed six or seven, but you don't end up feeding six or seven, it'll work great the next day.
I have to have it now because I grew up in that big house. Whenever we did cook, we always cooked big.
Mm.
And my house, where I live now, there's not as many people, and I'll always end up with a big pot of food at the end of it going, why did it all go?
Yeah.
I've never adjusted. I'm still overcooking. But it's great for the other side. I like your introduction to this book because it suckers me in. And when I started reading the introduction, I thought, Okay, it's got fuck on the cover, and it's quite a nice little introduction. Then you hit hard with your really trying to, I suppose, set the scene for undoing that preciousness around how we think about food. Because Australians, we're mocked overseas about our wine with our wine labels, all that crap on it. With, you know, it has a lemony taste, and if you sip it in this way, you can almost feel the southeasterly wind. You know,
what our wine labels are wine overly label. Descriptive. Is that
yeah,
what you're
overly saying? Descriptive. Right. And I think our food here has got to the point where people are getting so everyone's an aficionado. What do you say? An aficionado.
Aficionado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no one, you know, and everyone's petrified about actually having people over because you have to outdo the last dinner
We've
party.
We've projected
you went to.
These. Expectations onto ourselves, as you're saying, particularly women, and it's unfair.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, and MasterChef and those sort of shows have done it.
And MasterChef, the sort of the conceit was, these are regular people cooking, and they're quite gifted, but they're regular people. But actually, they're highly trained chefs doing extremely technical food that nobody should be expected to do in the kitchen at home. No way. So I think people internalise that and do think that they've got to go fussy, and they don't.
I love the section in barbecue here. Because again, because there's a lot of pressure on men to barbecue, and I looked at that and went, I kind of took a little bit off my shoulders.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah.
I kind of
get a little bit fussy, and I shy away from things which seem, because in this one, cooking fish on the barbecue seems like I can do it, but the way in which I've seen it done, because of our food culture, it just seems a bridge
hard.
Too far.
Yes. One of the my favorite things that I wrote about barbecuing is about how so many times, this has been me, but also I've witnessed it with others, somebody prepares everything, and they work quite hard, and they know how it's going to work on the day, and then a mate turns up, and they're like, let me help, and they fuck it up. Like, you surrender this beautiful piece of meat to your friend who has no idea how your barbecue works, or how to cook a piece of meat, and because you're being polite, you're like, you let them fuck it up. So one of my pieces of advice is, at this point, you own this fish. You own this bit of meat on the barbie. Don't let your friend take it over. You know, it's not the time.
So are you quite territorial around that kind of thing?
Well, you know,
only if you've done the work.
Yeah, if I've done the work, but I'm also really good at delegating. So I've got friends who are like my second in command. So they'll come over and I'll say, set your timer 4 minutes, and then turn it after 4 minutes, and they'll follow those instructions, and the food will be immaculate. So that's another thing in the book that I'm really hoping people take on is using your phone as a timer, and actually bothering to do that, because it makes a huge amount of difference if you take that guesswork away.
Yeah.
We all think like I've got to be like a free and creative chef, and you know, leave it up to the gods. I'll measure a pinch or a toss or a splash, but if you actually use measurements and set a timer, it takes a lot of the guesswork out, and you can recreate beautiful dishes over and over again.
You sound very reasonable there, but in the book, you're actually like, I used to do this, and it used to stuff up all these wonderful recipes, and don't do it with mine because I worked hard on these, and you follow my recipes to the law, the letter of the law. No magic, no nothing, just do it.
John, what I actually say is, no one cares more about these recipes being right than me.
There you go.
I have invested a fuckload of time making these perfect, so don't doubt me. Like, I've really tested them, you know. They shouldn't let you down. If you can follow instructions, you should get great food.
Well, the other thing about the barbecue was that you said that while friendly, you didn't like the smell of food within the house, and the barbecue sort of took it outside. Are you back in the kitchen, or are you still stuck out there in the rain cooking on the barbecue?
I've got a deck. It's covered. So rain or shine, I can cook out there. And beautifully, the neighbours don't get too much blowing. Like, it doesn't go straight into the neighbour's window. So I cook on the barbecue almost daily.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I really like it. And I've got a vegetarian barbecue. So I can...
Well,
I don't cook any meat on this one.
All right, dude.
So I've got two barbecues.
Okay, it's not like they're going to Bunnings and go, I want the vegetarian barbecue. How's that different, sir?
Through this magic door, please.
Yeah, because I've got a few friends who are a bit uptight about, you know, the meat particles getting on their food. So I just have one that we just do veggies on, and then the others will feed everything.
And desserts. Are there things here that we can smash together easily without too much trouble? I mean, desserts always terrify me. I've stayed away from them.
Right.
Actually, I've never actually taken on dessert.
Really?
No.
Really?
Too scared.
I actually started to cry when we were shooting one of the desserts, because a beautiful song came on that was from my childhood, Mazzy Star, Fade Into You, and we were setting the candles on the birthday cake that is the exact cake I make for my kids. And I've been through experiments, you know, making every kind of cake for these babies that I love so dearly, but the one that they ask for is the easiest. It's a chocolate ripple cake.
Mm.
So you just sandwich chocolate biscuits and fresh whipped cream and then slather it with more cream and dot it with strawberries. And that's the whole entire recipe. The problem is you have to leave it overnight.
Right.
So you have to think at least a day ahead, but it's really delicious and it's just so painless. So I was in the studio shooting this cake for the book. The song came on the stereo and I really had this vision of other mums with this immense pressure to show their kids that they love them with the cake that they make for the birthday.
Yeah.
And them actually making something that's so easy and so painless, so stress-free, but really appreciated, and kids dig it. That I started to cry. I was like, this one, I want to set women free.
Well, you're going to set a few men free too, because I panic when I think of getting people over, and I think, if we're going to get someone over, then I'm going to have to do this and the other, and then I'll stress out my wife completely just because of my behaviour,
mm-hmm.
and then so she'll stress out, and then we'll try to make everything, we'll go over the top, you
yeah.
know, and it just ruins the night.
Right.
This cannot, well, this book is pretty much saying, forget all that.
Yeah.
Just don't even concentrate on being there, having the people around, having some drinks, having some nice food that's
mm-hmm.
easy to do. That's pretty much the main message. And you want the house full of people coming through and eating. You talk about how your main obsession is food and eating.
Mm.
And that's community.
Yeah.
You know, so the end result here is you're not in the kitchen, you're not fretting, you're not putting your head in the oven. And setting it. You're coming back and sitting down and enjoying the company that you've provided food for.
That's right. And one of the Ten Commandments of Zero Fucks, because on the back cover you'll see there are 10 commandments. One of them, I don't remember which number it is, but I think it's number 6. Thou shalt not apologize. You've cooked. You know how it's so easy to say, oh, I'm really sorry I cooked it too long. Oh, I'm sorry I couldn't get the right berries. It's meant to be blah, blah, and... You're setting up this food.
I thought that was a key part of entertaining, is just apologising. Sorry about the house, sorry about the food. Sorry I'm such a bad friend. Thank you for coming and visiting.
His arms are activated.
Exactly. Yeah, so if you can control it, don't apologise. You know, you've tried, you've cooked, and that's enough. So just, you know, just sit on that, own that.
So what do? You put the food on the table and say, fuck you.
Eat a dick. No, when they say thank you so much, I say you're very welcome.
Don't thank me, thank you me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here in my home. Please eat.
It's amazing how often I hadn't really thought about it, but how much the beginning of a meal is all apologies. Both my wife and I both have that habit. I didn't do the chicken. I left the chicken on too long already. We have to mention the quality of the book itself, because the photos
we talk about that.
Divine.
Yeah, we talk about the problem of the, you know, kind of aspirational, over the top cookbooks, but yeah, this competes on that level. This is actually a beautiful book, and it's just. It's a visual delight, but then you look at this stuff and you think, you can actually cook it.
Yeah, a lot of the like the crockery is my own. We shot inside my house. They're my actual grotty kids and my actual grotty clothes.
But they're not actors.
So yeah, it's all legit. You know, it's just that's inside my home, that collage wall of photos that
beautiful.
I've just taken from my phone and then got printed into stickers.
Oh, so you don't have the... The Polaroid camera,
it's just an app. But yeah,
the
I wanted everything to look good because I do quite like food. I do quite like food and I like looking at delicious food.
It really is like a welcome home book.
I got my mum to be in a lot of it.
Yeah.
So that's her there. So she's Japanese, and that's informed a lot of the food that you see in the book. She's not like a chef of Japan. She's like more like a housewife level of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Although she was a businesswoman, she's not, you know, a stay-at-home mum. She's a very accomplished lady, cooking for 4 kids just like me, working full-time and then just struggling to throw things together. But she always cooked really good, healthy food. And so having that Japanese background has been a big inspiration, and I've tried to share some of that as well in the recipes.
You talk about the trips you used to take, 3 hours or something to Melbourne to go shopping and pick up all the things that you needed to do. And yet, you know, things have changed so much that a lot of this is now available in Woolies or Coles and
whatever. That's right, yeah. Yeah, in mainstream supermarkets you can buy things like mirin and, you know, good soy sauce, seaweed, sushi rice, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's a completely different world. We couldn't even get tofu back then, you know. It was like, oh, I'd love some tofu. So, yeah, so my mum finds it easy to cook Japanese food now, and I think Australian people can, you know, find it equally easy. It's just a bit intimidating if you don't have the mum there or the Asian friend at the Asian grocer to sort of talk you through what you need to get. It can be a bit of a spin out, but everything is within reach for most Aussies.
Returning to the title, Zero Fucks.
Yeah.
Your career is, you know, you've done quite a lot of different things in your career. Now this, and you talk about how food was so important to you, and you started off making food and sort of drifted into, you were on TV doing music shows and then chat shows, and you're doing podcasts now, very open and honest podcast. What are the things that are changing? The world seems to be changing around you in a way, sort of more accepting of who you are, because we're catching up in essence. Because when you first appeared on TV, you were like, you sort of burst out, and you were different, and you were just outspoken, and you said things that, you know, that kind of, ooh, okay, and yet, you know, is it okay that the world is catching up with you, or are you feeling like, I've got to do something now that's going to really mess with everybody?
Push it past yeah. It. I love that question. It's such a lovely way of looking at you know, a long time in broadcasting and TV and stuff. I think when I got the job at Channel V in the year 2000, so 18 years ago, that I was a rebel and the naughty kid, and that's what they wanted, you know. So that sort of aspect of my personality got nurtured, which is not what you need necessarily for a successful long career in broadcasting. But yeah, being a bit cheeky and irreverent helped, I think, and it suited that space of music, TV, and interviewing rock stars and people. You know, often your subject that you were sitting with would be drunk and high, and, you know, you have to sort of find some way of extracting a moment from the interaction. So there was a lot of, like, dancing, mental dancing, you know, furious behind the scenes paddling. And then, you know, translating that and finding a new place for that on mainstream TV was, you know, it was a bit of a trick, actually, and I didn't watch TV, so I didn't understand what I was doing, really. So there were, you know, terrific upsets there and huge tumultuous times for me. When I did The Circle, that was like a, you know how you have some jobs that you just do for money, and there are some jobs that you love really deep in your heart? The Circle was a love job. Like, we all loved each other. We loved the job. Our boss, Pam Barnes, was just an exceptional leader. So we loved her as well. And she was like, you know, the mother duck, and we were her little ducklings, just trying our best, you know. So that collapsing was painful. And I wondered what would come after that. And surprisingly, lots of things came, including two more babies. So I had this sort of time of, you know, bunking down a bit, job offers coming and me going, you know what, do I want to be away from my babies for this work? And a lot of it was like, you know what, no way, no fucking way. And the thing that really appealed to me was when I would take a photo of the dinner I cooked for my kids, and other people would go, can you tell me how you did that? And then if they actually made it, these strangers on the internet, if they actually made the dish that I'd suggested and helped create, I would be so thrilled. Like, my thrill level was just, it was bigger than when we won a Logie. You know, it was just so personal and so unfaked, you know, that somebody would bother to cook the food that you suggest. Really meant so much to me. So I thought, this is maybe the thing that I can do with my time, because time is so precious, you know. And coming out of two pregnancies, it's almost like recovering from a chronic illness. Like, you just, you're pretty shit for 2 years. Two pregnancies in 2 years. There's a lot you can't do. So as soon as the babies were out and I kind of got myself, my body back. I just sprinted towards this idea, you know, of the thing that thrills me is cooking and sharing that, and I'm going to go for it as hard as I can.
You talk about the good side of social media. There is a flip side of social media. But it also, to me, it seems like it's been tackled back to the ground by the good guys at the moment, because there's a whole lot of movements there that are really redefining how we behave. Although we've got more on Trump doing his grandest out there, he kind of is working against himself and the stuff that he's doing. Do you feel that there's a shift? Because I believe when Twitter and that sort of first happened, it was a little like a big group hug. And then it kind of got evil. And it seems to be coming. Do you feel it's coming back?
Yeah, I do a bit, actually. There's sort of a growing accountability for what people say, isn't there, online? And I kind of feel with Trump, it's the last gasp of that shitty kind of mentality before it dies completely. And things do, the pendulum swings. Mm. So maybe it's just having that moment of last shittiness. Like people having their last shitty bit of anti-gay marriage, getting that out.
Yeah.
And then, okay, everyone, as a collective, we're gonna walk towards this much more accepting and beautiful legislation that people can enact. They've had their little spray. Let's all move on together. So, you know, that's a positive way of looking at it.
Yeah, I'm really hopeful there seems to be more people standing up and being accountable. And protecting others. It seems just now, in the last couple of months, it seems like things have shifted a little bit. Whether jerks are really getting shouted down.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
So no, we're not having any of that.
Mm.
So kind of hopeful. But in down the line for you, you got your podcast, which is doing really well. It could be books and stuff, or TV shows, or some around all that. Are you ready to come back and sit in front of cameras and on radio and all do all that stuff again, or are you?
Yeah, so the podcast is called Ladies We Need to Talk, and it's all about taboo issues that women should probably talk about more. We're recording a second season, which will hopefully be out in a few months. But yeah, I think there'll be an attendant book. It might not be through ABC, it might be through Heidi Grant, the publisher of this book.
Yeah.
But yeah, something along those lines, definitely. As far as my own career for the next year goes, I think I really like calling, you know, I just flew internationally on Monday, and you have to write down your job description, and I always scratch my head because what are you going to say? I'm a TV presenter or what? So I wrote author, and I really thought that, well, that's big upping yourself, isn't it, Steins? Who the fuck do you think you are, an author? Really? But that gave me a real little thrill of pleasure, so I'm going to keep it that.
We're holding your book.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, an author.
Well, that's marvelous. We're really, really happy that you'd come in and talked about Zero Fucks with us. It's been fun, but also got to hear a little bit more about what's going on with you as well.
Thanks.
Ben, have you got any last words for Yumi?
No, I'm really thankful for this book. I think it's a fantastic thing. I look forward to selling it.
Thank you. Try the chicken wings. They're a really good gateway drug.
Gateway to what?
Gateway to eating more Zero Fucks food.
And on that note, and you can get your copy of Zero Fucks at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.